This is an iHeart podcast.
Okay, so we have the White House, we have the Senate, we have the House of Representatives. So what are we going to do now? I know this is a time of celebration, of feeling good, but now the work begins, doesn't it? This allowed us to start the work. That's what it did. I don't want to be the Debbie Downer. We got to get back in the weight room, but it's time to get back in the weight room. What do we need to work on first? First and foremost, the border. It's no debate. Remember, we've talked about this many times before, and we'll get to the debt in a few minutes, but unending mass immigration, legal and illegal, will end a nation of any size. Any size. No country can withstand unending numbers of people pouring into it from poor, crime-ridden third world dumps. That's not how it works. Throughout history, every time it's happened, the country has collapsed. It's not enough to simply secure the border. We have to begin deporting people and deporting them in mass. I like the cut of Tom Holman's jib.
We have seen one estimate that says it would cost $88 billion to deport a million people a year.
I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Is that what American taxpayers should expect?
What price do you put on national security? Is that worth it?
Is there a way to carry out mass deportation without separating families?
Of course there is. Families can be deported together.
Did that make you squirm in your chair? I hope not, because that's what it's going to take. There is no polite, nice, empathetic way to round up 15 to 20 million people, apprehend them, you have to locate them, you have to apprehend them, and then you have to remove them from your country. And it cannot be done politely. There will be tears. People will get hurt, undoubtedly. That's how it goes. Are you mentally ready for that? It's a must. It must happen. And are we ready for pushback like you've never seen before? Because we've had this talk before. Illegal immigration en masse is not a side issue for communists. It is maybe the central part of their plan. They must replace patriotic citizens with foreigners who can be bought for a Visa card. It is a central part of their plan. Massachusetts governor's already saying, don't expect any help from us.
If the Trump administration requests it, would the Massachusetts State Police assist in mass deportations?
No, absolutely not. I think that the key here is that, you know, every tool in the toolbox has got to be used to protect our citizens, to protect our residents, and protect our states, and certainly to hold the line on democracy and the rule of law as a basic principle, right?
Protect our citizens and protect our residents. You know what she said. Again, the communist to the communist. A wide open border, filling up your country with murderers and rapists, is not a thing he does on the side. It's everything to him. How else could he collapse this country he's trying to collapse? So we have to be ready for that. And speaking of getting ready about things or to do things that make us uncomfortable, priority number two, government people have to go to prison. I've said it many, 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 many times before, but I'm going to say it again. There are little signs and symbols, there are signs and symbols when you're getting in better shape. You're not as out of breath anymore. The signs that we are on the right track to fixing this horribly corrupt and broken country will be government people going to prison. Not just fired, not just blasted in the news. No. Arrests, trials, prison. These people are criminals. It's not that we want to just arrest people for being Democrats. Of course not. They have committed crimes against their country, and they must be arrested for those crimes. Remember when Andy McCabe said this?
He runs the risk of really dismantling
and greatly incapacitating the Department of Justice and the FBI. I have a lot of conversations with former colleagues, people who are or were in the intelligence and law enforcement community and may have worked in, you know, the Obama administration, other places. And, you know, people are really trying to assess, like, what is life going to be like if Donald Trump wins a second term? And on a very personal level, I mean, these are torturous discussions with their family members about whether or not they have to leave the country to avoid being unconstitutionally and illegally detained. I mean, people are actually worried about being thrown in jail or grabbed in some sort of extrajudicial detention.
Yes, they should be worried about being thrown in jail. Many of them should be arrested and put on trial, given a fair trial and put in jail. And everyone who's concerned about that should leave the country with their families. Goodbye. Too bad. So sad. We'll see you later. And speaking of the FBI, the organization itself shouldn't exist anymore. I'm not naive enough to think that's something that's going to be done by Donald Trump and the Republicans in the next 4 years. But I'll tell you, cutting out huge portions of the government must happen. It must. No, they're not going to eliminate the FBI like you want, like I want. But huge parts of the government have to go. And when I hear things like this about the Department of Education, sounds good to me.
I'm going to close the Department of Education and move education back to the states. And we're going to do it fast.
Good. They have to go. We can't do this thing where we take a bunch of people in this horrible department, we'll make it the Education Department. We take these horrible commies and we kick them out because we got the presidency. And we replace them with our people, but we leave the department there. Because what will happen is eventually, shocking as this sounds, Democrats will win another election, and then they're going to take our people and remove them and put their people right back in and go back to abusing the country. The department itself has to be removed. And these are the things that make people uncomfortable. And speaking of making people uncomfortable, there's nothing that people hate more than spending cuts. This is one of those things we all lie to ourselves about. Yeah, they need to cut spending. They need to cut spending. And then you show people the federal budget. You say, you want to cut this, this, and this, like the big parts of it that have to be cut to save the country? And that's when they start, well, I mean, maybe not that, but spending has to be cut. There's been a lot of talk, serious talk, about bringing in Elon Musk, and yes, this has to happen.
All government spending is taxation. So whether it's direct taxation or all government spending, it either becomes inflation or it's direct taxation. Your money is being wasted, and the Department of Government Efficiency is going to fix that. We're going to get the government off your back and out of your pocketbook.
It has to happen. And spending cuts are uncomfortable. Remember when Elon Musk bought Twitter, which he renamed X, which is kind of weird. Remember when he bought Twitter? He spent his time firing people. You need to go, and you need to go, and you need to go. And online, it was so sad. Oh my gosh, I'm so sad. I'm out of a job. Government employees must be fired by the thousand, and the debt must be cut. We can't have $35 trillion in debt. It's going to be uncomfortable, but it has to happen. And speaking of Elon Musk, he's been hot on something else, even though this isn't the Elon Musk show. The birth rate, families. This is not a small thing. And no, I don't want the federal government to get too involved in families, but as a country, we are losing our nuclear families for a variety of reasons. We're losing nuclear families. Young men are not marrying young women and staying married and making babies. And I know this gets really uncomfortable because everyone has a different walk in life, and maybe that wasn't your walk in life, but the nuclear family is the building block of every country, not just ours, every country. A country made up of strong nuclear families will be strong, and a country where nuclear families have been shattered will be weak, and it will blow with the wind. And that's where we are right now. Maybe that looks like tax incentives. Maybe it just looks like more talking about it, being bold about cultural issues like that. But this is where we have to go to save the country, all right? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Have a great show for you. Many of the issues start with the deportations. We'll deal with those next.
And on day one, we will begin the largest domestic deportation operation in American history.
I'm excited. I'm not going to lie. I'm very, very excited for this. Not because of the ugliness it's going to take to get it done, but because of the necessity of it. And it doesn't sound like they're backing off of that. So joining me now to talk about it, a couple people who know quite a bit. Victor Avila is a retired special agent with ICE, so he probably knows a little bit of something about it. And, of course, Julio Rosas, national correspondent with The Blaze and friend of the show. Okay, first, Victor, let's begin here. Obviously, locating people, apprehending people, and removing people from anywhere is not a pretty nice process. It can't be by its very nature. What does it look like? You were in ICE. I've never been in ICE. What does it look like? How does this get done?
It's going to be methodical. It's going to be cumbersome. And we know where these people are at. A lot of people say you're not going to be able to find them. We will be able to find them. And I tell people there's different categories of illegals, obviously, and we got to be cognizant of that. Obviously, we're going after the really bad ones right now. There's, the Venezuelans, Tren de Aragua, a lot of these illegals that came in just in the last 4 years. Plus, the ones that already have been ordered deported, there's over a million illegals walking around with a deportation order in their pocket. So we already know where they're at. And we're going to need a lot of cooperation here from the state and locals. There's a lot of things that we could do here. And we are going to do all of them and explore all of them. And one of those is to deputize a lot of the state and locals. HSI with the old U.S. Customs Authority has the authority to deputize state and locals. We do it a lot with our task force officers that come and work in our groups. And so giving them that authority will help in rounding up, because the state and locals know exactly where they're at. I could tell you in my hometown where we could go to the areas, and exactly in every state, we're going to be able to do that and start filling up these facilities. Remember all these facilities that we built for the illegals to come in and be processed? Well, now we're going to use them, but it's going to be the other way around, Jesse. It's going to be processing them on the way out of the country.
Gosh, I may just have to sit back and just cheer for a couple minutes at the thought of a country actually preserving and protecting its borders. Julio, by the way, why do we even need these mass deportations? Aren't all these people here just picking strawberries?
That's funny, because we actually do have a workers program where, like Yuma, for example, mm-hmm. they do use Mexicans who legally enter the country to work on the farms, and then they go back to Mexico once the season's over. So, I mean, it's very insulting to them, because obviously they're not illegal. But the reason, mm-hmm. The reason why we have this problem is because, I mean, it was day one. I mean, I know people like saying the day one, but it's so true. And so this has been a day that I know a lot of Border Patrol agents, a lot of people in the border communities of Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California have been waiting for, because, whenever there was a congressional delegation, I mean, that's basically what the answer was. Like, well, we got to wait for the election. We got to hope that we can get Trump back into office in order for this to be fixed, because the acute problem, this current problem, is coming from the executive branch, right? Obviously, there is the legislative aspect as well, but to address the current issues that we're facing right now, that can be solved, single-handedly by the incoming Trump administration. And so the thing is now is to make sure that that does have follow through. And I can tell you, I mean, you have people like Tom Homan, you have people like Stephen Miller that are going to be part of the new Trump administration that will, I've known Tom for years now, and he's just been a pit bull chained up, ready to go. And so he's going to have that. He's going to be unleashed on January 20th. So I know there's some people who are concerned, like, oh, well, Trump's not going to do it. Among conservatives, right? Because like, oh, Trump's not going to do it. He's like, I think it is going to happen, just because the people that are going to be staffing these positions are going to make sure that this campaign promise is going to be carried out. And if it's not carried out, that's a very big detriment, because the American people want this. I mean, the American people voted for this, and right, this is the popular vote. He has the mandate. So yes, there's going to be the media backlash, there's going to be the leftist backlash, but it doesn't represent what Americans want.
Victor, is there anything Trump and ICE and you guys can do about the places that aren't Texas? You know, I know you mentioned logistically deputizing. Look, you're not going to have trouble deputizing the Texas Rangers or Galveston right. County Sheriff's Department to participate. It's not going to be an issue here. But we already had the Massachusetts governor come out and say, well, no, you can't do that here. We know how California is going to handle it. How does that work with these blue cities and states that are obviously going to declare themselves to be sanctuaries and, no, you can't touch our illegals? Can you do anything there?
Absolutely. And it's funny, you know, with these sanctuary cities and policies, a lot of time it's not the actual police, it's the mayors, it's the these county commissioners dictating to the sheriffs and chiefs of police what they can and cannot do. Several things. 287G is going to come back. If you're not familiar with 287G, this law that will give the state and locals the authority to do it. And it's going to be about sanctions. It's going to be about cutting them off financially. And Trump has already said it. I don't doubt he'll do it in a minute and cut them off. A lot of the county jails around the country are subsidized by federal monies. And so you cut that off, they're not going to be able to function. I'll put it to you this way. We're going to incentivize them very, very strongly to participate with ICE. And there are other programs, by the way, Jesse. We used to have, back then it was INS, but even with ICE, ERO, enforcement removal operations, an actual deportation officer inside the county jails, when these illegals would get arrested, immediately you get flagged, immediately you place the detainer, but now the detainer will be honored, the detainer will be respected and executed if for whatever reason that illegal person is released. Something really quick as well that we have to talk about here is Mexico. Mexico, we got issues over there. We got a new president over there, is a full communist. She won't even call President Trump to acknowledge him as a new president of the United States, president-elect. So we have issues there. Mexico has to be dealt with very, very seriously. The cartels and the designation of the cartels as foreign terrorist organization is all part of this whole deal. It's going to be a little bit complicated. It's going to be a lot, but we're going to be doing it simultaneously. And you're going to immediately see some big changes, Border Patrol and all of those. You're going to see them right away because at the border, it's going to change overnight on January 20th, 21st. It's going to change. But then you're going to start seeing it a little bit of slow, like what's happening with the deportations. I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be happening behind the scenes. But when people are going to start realizing is that their towns are going to start becoming safer. It's all about public safety and national security. And when they start seeing that now they could actually go to the park that they couldn't go to before, that their child can ride the bike where they couldn't ride it in Del Rio, Texas, and those type of changes, then people are going to realize it's happening and it's going to happen one at a time. And it's going to be a million first, then another million. But we have to hold these countries accountable, not just Mexico, Central America, and the rest of the world that have allowed their people to come into ours illegally.
Julio, how do we, to what Victor just said, the new president of Mexico is just an unmitigated freaking disaster. Those poor people in that country can never seem to buy a decent government. So how do we take on the cartels without the cooperation? I forget about without the cooperation, with the opposition of Mexico's president. This presents a problem. I know we can do it. How do we do that?
Well, it's through trade. I mean, this is what Trump did the first time around. I mean, when the migrant care, the whole reason why Mexico reorganized its National Guard to be used to stop the migrant caravans is because Trump threatened them with tariffs and said, hey, we're going to tax everything. We're going to tax everything that's coming through the border. And so that's our leverage. And that's a leverage that the Biden administration never used. They just said, Mexico, you do whatever you want. Until it started to get politically inconvenient. And so then they started doing this, you know, this minimal pressure. It's like, hey, can you guys, would you mind, you know, it's not making it, you know, can you spread them out a little bit, not have them go in one place? Can you just spread them out a little bit so it doesn't look as bad? And just do some interior enforcement operations just until the election. That's basically what their plan was. So then, you know, then kind of go back to business as usual. But you're right. So the United States has, not to sound too full of ourselves, but in this relationship, we're the top dog. Right, we're the top dog in this relationship, and we need to act like it. And again, I think with the people that the new Trump administration will have. I think they're going to use that tool in that toolbox to say, Mexico, you know, playtime's over. You got, you know, they have that huge money incentive to allow this to happen. So we got to cut that off as well. And it's just, but I just really want to emphasize this, is that this was such a huge disaster, and that's why Harris lost. I mean, before 2021, people had no idea what Tren de Aragua was. And now that is a common word that people know from Texas all the way to New York. Why? Because they opened the border. They said, come on in. And people, American citizens, are dead as a result of that. And that is so sickening. And that is why it's such a relief that this is now finally going to be solved. Again, there is larger issues when it comes to immigration that do need to be addressed. But the acute problem, the most stark issues of this problem, you know, hopefully by January, you know, starting January 20th, will be fixed. And it's a vindication, because people were saying, you're racist for being concerned about the border. What, you scared of brown people? It's like, no, Latinos were the primary victims of this. Are they racist? Mm-hmm. No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. The Tren de Aragua victimized Latinos, and then they only started to become a problem when they started to affect white people. And again, that's not to play into the left's, you know, racial game, but that's how you gotta present it to them, right? We're all Americans. We all deserve to be safe, and this is what needs to be done. And America said, yes, we're not going to deal with this anymore.
And we are the top dog. That's a good way to put it, Julio. We are the Marines. They are every other lesser branch. Victor,
happy
Julio,
birthday, Jesse.
Thank you so much. Happy birthday, my brother, Semper Fi. Thank you, boys. All right, let's talk about the economy next.
After the greatest political comeback in American history, we're going to lead the greatest economic comeback in American history under Donald Trump's leadership.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm all on board for it. And Lord knows we need it, because we have got to grow our way out of this freaking disaster we're in. But can we? What is realistic? What is not? We know Carol will give it to us straight, as she always does. Joining me now, the great Carol Roth, author of the book, several books, actually, which are all wonderful, but You Will Own Nothing, highly recommend it. Okay, Carol, obviously the economy will get better under these two, under Trump and the GOP and fewer regulations, and just on energy alone, because there's such a wad of money waiting there to be spread around. So it will get better. How much better can it get? They can't fix everything. That's not realistic. How much better can it get?
All right. So first of all, this is our first time coming together since the election, and we have not taken a collective victory lap. We have not, you know, bathed in the optimism. So this will probably be my most optimistic time with you. And I'm sure as time goes on, this will kind of tail off. But I'm in this moment of optimism because I do think that sentiment is very self-fulfilling. You know, if you are a business or an individual that wants to, you know, do something to make an investment, like, you're not going to do that under Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. But now, when these shackles have been, you've been freed from them, you have the feeling that you can go ahead and make these types of investments. And those are the things that are going to grow. So right now, I'm just going to bathe in the sense of optimism. And I do think that growth is the key here. And some of the areas that are really going to help with that is, one, regulation. You know, the Biden-Harris administration on small business alone, $1.7 trillion regulatory burden. So Donald Trump's going to walk that back. He's going to do things like put back flexible work. You know, he was pro independent contractor and gig worker. That's great for those people and for small business. He's going to create some certainty around longer term tax cuts. So all of these things can really help us to grow. And I do feel good that he has people around him this time that are more entrepreneurial. The Viveks, the Elon Musks, you know, these are the kinds of people that can show that path of growth and sort of balance that against any type of spending cuts that we're going to do. Now, does this mean that you're going to all of a sudden see prices drop back to the levels of 10 years ago? Absolutely not. I think the path forward is through growth and then making sure that wages across the board do really catch up. And so, you know, things are not, you're not going to see those prices drop down, but if your purchasing power can help catch up, that would be very helpful. It is a very delicate needle to thread, Jesse, and I'm sure we'll be talking about this a lot. So I'm not promising that you're not getting more inflation, and I'm not promising that everything is going to be great forever, but there is at least some semblance of a path that we need to begin to walk down.
Okay, walk me through the threading of that needle, Carol, or why is it a delicate needle, I guess is the way I want to put this. You, as you just laid out, blow up the energy industry, in a good way, sorry, blow it up in a good way, deregulate the economy, we're going to get growth. That seems, it doesn't seem delicate at all. It seems fairly straightforward. I know what you're talking about, but please explain, why is this a delicate needle to thread at all?
Well, I love the fact that I've taught you so much over the years that you actually know what I'm talking about now, because I remember we started, you had no idea what I was talking about. So let's just take a moment to celebrate that as well.
I still don't.
But the reality is we're in a different situation because of our fiscal foundation. You know, if you think back to the 80s and what they had to contend with, they had 30%-ish debt to GDP. Right now, we have more than 120% debt to GDP. We're running deficits that are double the historic average, and we're not, you know, in an offensive war or anything that's an emergency situation right now. So that limits the options that we have, because if we really increase how much debt to GDP we have, or we increase the deficits to GDP, we're going to end up in a sovereign debt crisis. And that's very wonky, and we could talk about that another day. But just if you believe me on that, the fact of the matter is that we have to make sure when we make these cuts to government that it's done so with the growth alongside of it. Otherwise, you end up shrinking the GDP, you end up shrinking the tax collections, and that actually ends up expanding the deficit, which is something we don't want to see. So we really need strategic thinkers in there who are going to understand we can't just go in with the hatchet we would all love to take to the government on day one without the delicate modeling out of how we're going to have the growth exceed what we're doing on the cutting side. So it has to be done in a very methodical manner. And if it's not done in the right manner, then it could have, you know, adverse consequences. One of those no good deeds becomes or goes unpunished types of situations.
Carol, Trump loves tariffs. He loves to talk about them. He's very much more of a Teddy Roosevelt type Republican. It's not been the norm in GOP circles, but Trump kind of has brought that back. People have a vague understanding of what tariffs are, but is this a good idea, a complete disaster? He loves them. He talks about it a lot, and he means it. He's been talking about it since long before he got into politics. What's the deal with tariffs?
So I am a centrist on tariffs. I think that there are some places where there are businesses who don't have the ability to make their products in the United States. There isn't the know-how. The cost would be absolutely prohibitive. And to put tariffs on those companies will actually put them out of business. However, there are places where not only do we have a lot of options, but maybe it's critical to our national security. This is one of those things we learned during COVID, is how much of the supply chain is sitting in other countries and could absolutely cripple us. And for those countries, we do want, or types of situations, we do want to incentivize companies to be making those products here in the U.S. So I think, again, a thoughtful, strategic approach needs to be taken. The other issue with tariffs, just like everything else, is math and logic. It's really lovely to say we'll just go and throw a tariff on everything. But we have to remember that 70% of our economy is service-based. It's not goods-based. And people will say, well, Carol, that's the whole point, to bring manufacturing back. But we don't have the lowest cost of energy. We certainly don't have the lowest cost of labor. The reality is we're not going to be able to grow manufacturing to a point anytime in the near future where tariffs are going to be able to sustain the government that we have, or even one that we shrink down slightly. So again, a thoughtful strategic approach. There are going to be places where it makes sense, but does this happen across the board? No. And again, we're turning around a huge ship here, Jesse. So this is stuff that is going to, you know, we're going to have to do it one step at a time. It's, you know, how do you eat an elephant? You eat it one bite at a time. You can't just try to put the whole thing in your mouth. So I think that's what people are going to have to understand, is that there does need to be a thoughtful approach, and this is going to have some time. We just need to be moving that in the right direction to start making that progress.
Yeah, it's a delicate process. Picture yourself guiding Whoopi Goldberg hammered out of a bar into her car. That's kind of what we're left dealing with here. Carol Roth, you are the best. Come back and join us soon. I appreciate you. All right. Mike Davis is going to be a bulldog, has been a bulldog for Donald Trump. What are his plans for the deep state? Let's talk about that next.
I will immediately reissue my 2020 executive order restoring the president's authority to remove rogue bureaucrats, and I will wield that power very aggressively. Second, we will clean out all of the corrupt actors in our national security and intelligence apparatus. We will totally reform FISA courts, which are so corrupt that the judges seemingly do not care when they are lied to in warrant applications.
Man, I don't even know if Mike and I need to talk. Maybe we should just play that on a loop over and over and over again. I could just sit and watch it and just drink it all in. Joining me now, Mike Davis, founder of the Article 3 Project. Mike, it sounds really good. And since Trump's election, they haven't backed off of that. You haven't backed off of that kind of talk. It hasn't been a, you know, well, I guess, never mind, let's get along. It looks to be all gas, no brakes right now in getting these criminals out of our government, is it?
It seems that way. I am very happy that President Trump is going to fulfill his campaign promise to reform our intel agencies and justice system. They have been politicized and weaponized, going all the way back to Crossfire Hurricane against President Trump, Russian collusion. They've gone after Trump, his top aides, Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro, who they put in prison, his supporters on January 6th, who they politically persecuted, according to the Supreme Court's Fisher decision in June. They went after parents outraged by gender chaos in schools and the resulting rapes in high school bathrooms. They went after pro-life Christians, including putting a pro-life Christian in prison for 75 years for praying at an abortion clinic. Well, they gave amnesty to Joe Biden, Biden family, BLM, Antifa, Hamas, abortion industry activists, trans terrorists. We need to fix this.
Mike, how can we fix it? I believe you, I'm well aware of what you and I want done. You know what we would like done? I want government people in handcuffs. I don't say that to throw bombs. If you've committed crimes, especially using your power in government to commit these crimes, you should go away. You should be in prison longer than a pro-lifer who was praying. But setting that aside, I want to do whatever is realistic. What can realistically be done to clean them out? Firings? Are arrests even possible?
Look, I think President Trump needs to appoint a very strong attorney general. He needs to appoint a very strong deputy attorney general, FBI director, White House counsel, DNI. Look, President Trump was a political novice when he ran the first time. He had never run for office. He had never been in office. He has absolutely learned his mistakes from his first term. He's publicly said that. He's not gonna get duped again by Russian collusion and the other nonsense that the deep state threw at him the first time. And I think he's been very clear that in his public statements that he understands we have to fix this. We are going to destroy our country if we have a politicized and weaponized justice system and intel agencies. This has to get fixed, and I'm very pleased that was one of his first public pronouncements as the president-elect.
Lisa James made a public statement the other day, and I think maybe I misinterpreted it initially. When I first heard Letitia James, I'll play it in a second. I know you've already seen it, Mike. When I first heard her say this, I took this as being an offensive thing. We're going to resist. We're going to do this or that. But more than I think about it, and I know about the crimes she's committed, maybe she's talking about playing defense here. Here was Letitia James.
We did not expect this result, but we are prepared to respond to this result. And my office has been preparing for several months because we've been here before. We faced this challenge before. And we use the rule of law to fight back. And we are prepared to fight back once again. Because as the Attorney General of this great state, it is my job to protect and defend the rights of New Yorkers and the rule of law. And I will not shrink from that responsibility.
Mike, are we looking at an offensive or defensive statement? Should she be worried?
What New York Attorney General Tish James just said there is absolutely outrageous. She campaigns for Attorney General on getting Trump. She politicized and weaponized her office to go after Trump for the non-fraud of Trump paying back sophisticated Wall Street banks in full on time as agreed with interest. She's part of the Democrat lawfare and election interference campaign against President Trump. Look, I'm not going into the Trump administration. I'm going to be continuing to support Trump from the Article 3 Project. But I really hope that whoever Trump picks as his attorney general will hold her accountable for what she has done with this politicized and weaponized justice system against her political enemies. This is a conspiracy against rights under 18 U.S.C. Section 241. It's outrageous, and she needs to back off.
Okay, let's talk about the judges. That is one thing that was lasting and really, really, really good from the first President Trump term. Obviously, you're never going to nail it 100% on SCOTUS, Kavanaugh, but setting that aside, we have a bunch more local judges that Trump will be putting into place. How's this look, Mike? How do you vet these people to make sure you don't get some dirty snakes in there?
Look, President Trump's biggest and most consequential accomplishment of his first term was the transformation of the federal judiciary to the first constitutionalist majority in 90 years, including three appointments to the Supreme Court. They'll disappoint us from time to time, but overall, it's a very good Supreme Court, and it's getting better and better by the term. I think President Trump will build on that in his second term with even more bold, even more fearless judges. We have a much better Senate this time with, 53, it looks like, Republican senators. We don't have so many squishes this time. And frankly, when I was the chief counsel for nominations the first time, we were able to break through so much Democratic obstruction that we set up an assembly line to make it much easier for President Trump to confirm his judicial and executive branch nominees this time. He's ready to go on day one.
The Supreme Court, are we looking at any, can you see on the horizon over the next 4 years any of these justices retiring? And let me ask a question that is uncomfortable, but it's a very valid question. Clarence Thomas, who I freaking love, honestly, everyone who's decent on the right loves Clarence Thomas. Is it time for him to maybe retire?
Look, when these justices have lifetime tenure, they're going to go when they want to go. I've said this publicly to these judges on the federal bench. The stars are aligned right now. We have President Trump back in office. He's proven that he can appoint very good judges. We have a much stronger Republican Senate this time than we even did the first time. So if Republican judges are looking for like-minded successors, people who will carry the torch for them, younger, more bold, more fearless judges, now is the time to consider stepping down. But you're not going to tell a federal judge to leave. They're going to leave on their own time. I think if I were Justice Alito, I think I would get out quickly. I think he's accomplished what he wants to accomplish. But, maybe Justice Thomas has some more. He'll step down when it's appropriate for him, when it's appropriate for the country. He'll do the right thing, and I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, I know. The man is the patriot of patriots. I'm certainly not worried about his heart or his motivation at all. I'm just thinking about the state of that court. All right, finally, pardons. These are things that usually come at the end of a presidential term, but you already mentioned people rotting in prison, January Sixers, Meemaws. There are people who don't need to do another 4 years in prison until the end of Trump's term. That's politically, it could be political capital that is limited to start pardoning people. How does that look, Mike?
Like I said, I'm not going into the administration, but I would strongly advise President Trump's White House counsel and his attorney general to pardon these almost all of the January 6th defendants. The Supreme Court made very clear in the Fisher decision that they were politically persecuted. For the worst offenders, you commute their sentences. There's nothing that happened on January 6th that calls for a 22-year prison sentence. That is ridiculous, especially considering the Biden Kamala Justice Department gave amnesty to the much more deadly and destructive BLM and Antifa and Hamas rioters. And so I hope that's a high priority, and I'll certainly make that a high priority, advocating for their pardon and commutations at the Article 3 Project.
Mike, I appreciate it. Thank you, brother. I'm hopeful. And the more I hear, the more hopeful I get. We'll see how it goes. Final thoughts next. Now the work begins, and there's a ton of work to do. The bad news is there's a ton of work to do, but the good news is there's a ton of work to do. What does that mean? Well, just tackle a new thing all the time. There's always something new that Republicans, that Donald Trump, his administration, hopefully the House, hopefully the Senate, there's a bunch to do, and we have to get going. What we have to remember is that we have a role to play in all this too. You and I do, believe it or not. You may feel like you're helpless, but that you're not. Public backing. Remember, politicians, they're mostly followers. They're not leaders. And even the ones who are leaders, they need our help. So when the propaganda campaigns begin, and many of them have already begun, oh, don't deport my housemate. When these things begin, you are going to have to steel yourself and be ready, and you're going to have to stop them from using your values against you. That is the communists' plan for the next 4 years. As soon as they lose power, they try to use your values against you. Don't you want to be nice? Aren't you empathetic? That isn't what Jesus would want. You're going to get a lot of that. So get ready. Mass deport. Cut spending. Let's get this government in order and get everything back on track. And maybe, just maybe, we can do a whole lot of good in the next 4 years and try to save this place. All right? All right. We'll do it again.
This is an iHeart podcast.